Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, kicking off hour number two, it is the home team presented by Athens Technical College. Your passion, your future, elevated. We're here till 6:30 tonight, and then we'll that'll take you right into the start of Georgia basketball. The Dogs at Kentucky.
Tough place to win, old Rupp Arena.
Yes, it is. Not just for Georgia, but you know, for anyone except Evansville. They did win there this year.
They own Kentucky.
They do.
In Rupp Arena.
I don't think Kentucky's lost at home since then, and their wins at home. They've beaten Louisville there.
They got a
nice Missouri and Bama in conference.
They got a nice win at Arkansas this past weekend, too, which, as we were saying at the end of last week, that's a good thing for Georgia. I think that Kentucky won.
Because coming off that Carolina loss.
You don't want to catch them on a two-game losing streak at Rupp.
Yeah.
No.
It's coming off that loss at South Carolina, they were slight underdog Saturday on the road at Arkansas. Arkansas was having a very good season, but yeah, I guess even for Arkansas's point of view, it's they probably felt like too when Kentucky lost earlier in the week to South Carolina.
Well,
Arkansas fans are like, oh man,
there goes our upset chances.
Yeah, so they did win, and yeah, at least for Georgia, the Cats aren't coming in tonight on a two-game losing streak, which does bring us to today's 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, these two teams met exactly 2 weeks ago here in Athens, and on that night we felt like Georgia had a real shot to maybe win the game, pull an upset, and the Dogs did. Was neck and neck. Kentucky, last 5 minutes of the game, really not good for Georgia. The Cats took control, ended up winning it. How do we feel about Georgia's chances tonight on the road, though, at Rupp?
It is a tough place to play. Kentucky is really, really good. They had a tough loss, Chris, as you just mentioned, to South Carolina. They seem to get everything in order against Arkansas. It's a big challenge for Georgia, and plus, we talked about this in the first hour, just the quick travel, playing a late game, 8:30 in the Central Time Zone on Saturday night. Team gets back late Saturday night, Sunday morning, and has to fly out again on Monday to head up to Rupp. So a lot of things working against Georgia tonight. I think it just comes down to it. Here's where we go back to our old hot take issue. Georgia's got to make shots. The Georgia's only chance tonight is to shoot the ball really, really well. And yeah, you got to be competitive on the glass. And yeah, you got to be competitive when it comes to turnovers. But in the end, if Georgia's stat line, if the field goal percentage is in the 30s, if the three-point percentage is in the teens, Georgia's not going to win. Now, the field goal percentage needs to be around 50%, if not better, and the three-point percentage needs to be in the mid to upper 30s to go win in Rupp Arena. You know, it's kind of like we say, we talk about it in football a lot, you know, to beat the Patriots, to beat Bama. You got to win by 14 to win by 3. I can remember when we went up there and won in 2002, their sports information director at the time said, y'all played great because to come in here, you've got to win the game. You're not going to get a break. You're not going to get a bounce. And when that blue haze sets in, you know, it can be like a three-point game, three, steal, dunk, steal, three. Next thing you know, it's an 11-point game, and that place is just –
And if you do get a call up there like LSU did last year, they'll change the rule after the season.
Yes, they will. So. And it's all one of those up there, too. You know the worst thing that could happen? If you get a close early call, it's like, oh, my God. Well, now they're going to get the next six.
Because you know, the officials being human as they are, when the whole arena is booing them, it only makes sense that they might start to try and win the crowd back over.
I know you've heard this one a million times too, Brave. The great and incomparable Hugh Durham, you know, he was doing one of those shows, and man, I miss the old coaches call-in shows, and you know, Coach Durham would say, yeah, that's the thing. You're up at Kentucky the ball's out on them, and the ref points and goes, red ball. The ball's out on you on a close play. He takes three steps in a crow hop like a right fielder and emphatically points, white ball. And that crowd goes crazy. He said the same thing you did. They like to hear themselves get cheered for, too.
Yeah.
It's human nature.
Well, it's like there's that one ref that basically does a whole dance when he calls a charge or
TV
a block.
Teddy.
Is that him?
Yeah.
So he was on the scene last week, actually, here in Athens in that Tennessee game. But, you know, to go back, that's the game Georgia won. Had a nice, comfortable lead at halftime. Shot 8 out of 13 shooting threes in the first half. So it was, and it was Edwards and Hammonds that were hot. But aside from Georgia's road woes this season, the Kentucky's one of the best free throw shooting teams in the country. They're averaging about 76% from the free throw line. They only shot 50% here in Athens 2 weeks ago, and Georgia still couldn't beat them.
And the door was open that night.
Yeah, I mean, a really good free throw shooting team did not have a good night shooting free throws. The Dogs really D'd up on the free throw line 2 weeks ago, and still, the game got away from them late, and the Cats won. But Georgia got blown out at Arizona State, got blown out at Auburn, and really got blown out Saturday at Mississippi State. So it's hard to be, 2 weeks ago there was a lot of optimism. 2 weeks later, not so much.
And the big thing is, and when the league started, those first five games we looked at it, and you just. The biggest concern wasn't necessarily the record. Again, that win over Tennessee was huge because at least you're not going 0-for.
Right.
So you're not going 0-5. But what you worry about with nine freshmen is, are these kids going to get beaten down? That's why, to me, I know this sounds nuts because obviously getting a win at Kentucky tonight would be a huge lift. But the game Saturday, in my opinion, is more important. Ole Miss here.
Yeah, it's home against Ole Miss. Ole Miss has not won a game in the conference. I think they've lost five straight overall because they lost the last game they played right before league play started. And I think they play Tennessee tonight or tomorrow. So they're going to be on the road this week and probably lose another game. So they'll be winless in the league coming here Saturday. So, yeah, that would be for sure the definition of another of another must win. I guess the thing with Saturday is coming off the game against Tennessee, Auburn, Kentucky, and Rupp, those are games you anticipate losing. You kind of go to Starkville at least feeling like you got a shot, and then it was just bad. But
the hump is a tough place to play.
And I think, maybe at this point you start to consider that, Edwards is going to be gone next season, and I guess Hammonds is also going to be gone after this season too, but the rest of the team is so young that even if you're not going to have an elite player like Edwards next season, that there's going to be a good little nucleus of young players to mature next year as sophomores to still give Georgia a chance. I mean, oddly enough, even without Edwards, to maybe end up somehow better off next season than they are right now, because it's a young team, and I think you see that when they've gone on the road.
Well, and I think you hit on something there too, Chris. And the Edwards effect, could it really pay off, as you said, next year, and maybe even more so 2 years from now, when Kamara, Wheeler, I think Christian Brown's got a chance to be a really good player, when those guys are juniors, and maybe a couple of other freshmen will come along, and can you add some pieces then? But I mean, you have got to have, even when you've got elites and a kid like Edwards, and we all know the players that Kentucky has gotten in with Calipari, the true freshman, Wall, Cousins, Davis, just so many of these elite guys, you've still got to have some veterans to get you through. And that was the deal too, especially when Ngamezi got suspended or kicked off or whatever it is. We were worried about our muscle on the inside coming into the year, and then when he was gone, the simple fact is there are just going to be some teams in this league that have got 21, 22-year-old post players that are going to be a very difficult matchup for us, which makes the Captain Obvious here importance of shooting the ball well, Captain Obvious here, even more important, because there are just going to be some teams we're just not going to match up on the boards.
Well, one of those guys was Richards for them 2 weeks ago, and he's the one. I feel like in the last 5 minutes of the game, Kentucky scored on every one of its possessions, and he was really the guy doing most of the damage. He's 6'11", and Georgia really doesn't have much of an answer for a guy that big.
But there are some really good pieces. I love Kamara, love Wheeler. Again, I think Brown's got a chance to be really good. One of the freshmen who is highly rated, we haven't seen a ton of this year, is Jaquan Walton. But I think the staff still feels like he's got a chance to be a good player. But, you know, you're spot on there with Edwards. Even if this season doesn't wind up with George in the NCAA tournament, just the attention and prestige that he's brought to the program. And we talked about it the day after the loss to Kentucky 2 weeks ago, that even though Kentucky won the game, and I know it was frustrating because it was one of those, and how many times through the years, I think back to that North Carolina game in 1997, or, you know, just games with Kentucky. Heck, even the one 3 years ago, you feel
there's like a bunch with Kentucky. You're right there.
And then in the end, it just slipped away. But I felt like that night was a win for Georgia basketball. The atmosphere that was in there, the fact, you know, Georgia was winning for a majority of that game, and obviously it got away. But I think it was also a showcase, and whether there were, you know, high school prospects who were there, who were watching, and certainly for those freshmen who will be back for the next year or two or three, that, you know, hey, we can compete in environments like this.
Yeah. You got to try and find some road wins this year somewhere.
That's
gonna
be hard.
I guess A&M is doable. They're not very good, but
Missouri.
Missouri's next week. You know, Florida, probably a no. Georgia's got to go to LSU. I think that's the last game of the regular season. That's likely
tough.
A no.
Yeah,
I mean, when was the last time Georgia even beat South Carolina?
Yeah,
and then, you know, Vandy. Nashville's been a weird
–
that's
oh,
always just a weird God. Place to shoot, play, win, and all that.
So could we win at Vandy, win at Missouri?
You know, A&M.
Yeah. If you could get those three.
Yeah.
And then –
no, but Saturday was just – I thought Saturday was bad. Mississippi State's not great or anything, and they just completely manhandled Georgia. And coming off a win against Tennessee, it just was bad. You know, for whatever strides you feel like the team might have made against Kentucky, they gave them away Saturday.
Yeah, you feel like it was a step back for the team. So now, you know, can Georgia come out and at least – put up a good showing to head into Saturday with some kind. We talked about, you know, the proximity of the dates and two road games doing a Saturday, Tuesday. At least no matter what happens tonight, it's a short flight back from Lexington. The game's at 7 o'clock. Team will be back here by, let's see if that gives it 9:30, 10. Team will be back here no later than midnight tonight.
Yeah.
Get in bed, go to class tomorrow, get back practicing. They'll be plenty well-rested, focusing in on Ole Miss. And I mean, that's the thing, though. When a schedule's tough like this, those games that you're quote-unquote supposed to win, they become so important. Because then all of a sudden, if you slip up in a game like that, then you're really underwater. Then you're at the point where you're taking on water faster than you can bail it out of the boat.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's an enormous amount of pressure on Saturday's game, then.
I mean, I can tell you this just with the Lady Dogs. We go to Arkansas Thursday. That's the first of four straight top 20 teams that we're playing, including South Carolina and Mississippi State, who played a phenomenal game last night. South Carolina's number one. They came back from eight down in the last 3 minutes to win. But like we won a game. Auburn's not very good. We had to win that game. We did. But in the third game of the year, we were playing Vandy at home, who's just like that was a game we had to have, and we dropped it. So now all of a sudden we're starting this four-game stretch at 2-3 instead of 3-2. And then if you're 3-2 and you say, you know what, well, if we steal one of those, we're still, you know, we're right there. Well, now our backs are really up against it. And I think for the guys, even if Georgia loses tonight, and odds are, you know, obviously in Kentucky's favor, but that Ole Miss game, you know, then all of a sudden – you know, golly, if you drop that one, then you're 1-5, and that's a home game against a team in the bottom. Like that's one of those games that Georgia really has to win on Saturday.
Yeah, because then you're, you know, not only are you talking about the NCAA tournament, then the NIT is even questionable. All right, moving on in the 5-5, Georgia gets a verbal commitment today from Prince Avenue Christian, 5-star quarterback Brock Vandegrift. Kirby now 2-0 against Lincoln Riley. Vandegrift had been committed to Oklahoma. He no longer is, and he is committed here. Jeff, is Georgia back with this commitment?
Sugar Bowl champions, that's right. that was a big get for Georgia, I think, and just in terms of the future, what he could mean to this class. Chris, as you pointed out, kind of one of your number one goals for the year 2020
was to sign at least one of the two elite quarterback prospects, and the two are Vandegrift and Caleb Williams. If Caleb Williams wants to commit and sign here too, we would take him, I would guess, but we at least do have one from Vandegrift.
Yeah, you're spot on there. And Vandegrift, I think, has the potential to be one of those bell cow type recruits and bring in some other players in this class. And just to get a player who's local, who plays just down the road at Prince Avenue Christian, who's so highly touted. I mean, the kid is a dynamite talent. Now, Prince Avenue and Athens Academy have got a really good rivalry going. I got friends with kids on both sides there. So even the diehard Athens Academy folks are, oh, yeah, this kid's really, really good. And there have been a lot of great quarterbacks who've come out of Athens through the years. I mean, certainly at the top, Andy Johnson would be number one. You know, if you want to go back to Fran Tarkenton, Paul Gilbert, David Dukes. And there have been a lot of really great quarterbacks here in Athens. I mean, the feeling is that Vandegrift is in that class. And again, you know, ratings are what they are, but when you're looking at a guy, I mean, he's ranked, and I was just looking at scout.com, has him as a number 8 player in the country, number 1 quarterback. Now, he's rated, depending on where you shop, he and Amarius Mims, tackle from Cochran, Georgia, top 2 prospects in the state. That was a, you know, maybe, you know, and again, I think the deals we said with Caleb Williams and Vandegrift, you got two elite quarterbacks. You needed to get one of them. And, you know, whichever one you liked better, if one of them was ready to commit, whether he was your number 1 or number 2, you were going to take him. But the fact that Vandegrift, being a local kid, junior day, and I had a pretty good feeling when he backed off the Oklahoma commitment. Plus, I've had my buddy Hamilton Culpepper working him over there in class every day at Prince Avenue, that he wanted that he wanted to stay close to home and be a Georgia Bulldog. So for him to go ahead and get locked in, and I just think, Brayman, you know, we've seen it through the years with various teams and with various Georgia classes. I brought up to when Eric Zier committed to Georgia, some of the players that were able to come in on top of that. When you feel like you've got that elite quarterback, that's a great cornerstone for a class.
So who is Georgia's starting quarterback in 2021?
Oh, my gosh.
We know it's going to be Jamie Newman this season.
It'll be Newman this year. Between Vandegrift, Mathis, and Beck, it's going to be a heck of a competition there.
Because the opener in 2021 is San Jose.
San Jose.
Like, 2021 is not...
That's the last year there's not a big non... Although, I was hosting Bulldog Hotline last night.
You worried about UAB?
Always. Greg McGarrity said the 2021 schedule, something still could come up.
Okay. So we're going to have to kick someone off, though.
But and not that that's for sure, but that's the last year. It happened like that with 18. Like, obviously, last year, Notre Dame, Virginia this coming year. Then from 22, it's Oregon, 23, Oklahoma. 20. It's at least one other big-name non-con, obviously, along with Tech every year. So 21's the 1 year. Where the first two games, San Jose and UAB, even that year?
Yeah, and then the other non-tech, non-conference game is Charleston Southern.
So, you know, again, I don't know. That's just something that Greg mentioned last night. But
well, that'd be good because the home schedule that year is atrocious.
Yeah.
Because it's San Jose State, UAB, Charleston Southern, Arkansas, Kentucky, Missouri, and South Carolina.
I'm going to go ahead and put our number one goal for 2021 – beat Tech and go undefeated at home.
Yeah, that should be it. That's also the type of schedule that if you did roll into the season with a true freshman at quarterback, that's not the worst schedule to do it against. You know, if your opener is the first two games of the season are San Jose State and UAB.
Well, that's,
and then I would assume after that there'd be an SEC game in there.
That's just one of those years where, you know, we talked about the list of schools that it said no, they cared not to play. That was just one of those years, just nobody fell into place. But maybe something will open up, who knows. But I think Vandegrift will certainly have a chance, and the fact that he'll come in early
will help for sure.
Yes.
All right, finally, Jeff, wrapping up the 5 at 5. The Super Bowl is set. We'll do our first Tuesday lean for Super Bowl. Whatever number is it? 54.
Yep.
54. We're on 54. Super Bowl 54 in Miami. The Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. This is right now the number's about one. You know, let's call it. It's the last time you had a Super Bowl that was basically a pick'em was that Seattle New England one game, which ended up was decided on the goal line.
Yeah,
it was a pick'em
with a pick.
Yeah, who do you like? Because Pete Carroll, who has a history of needing 1 yard and not giving the ball to his best player, did it again.
Could have another natty and another Super Bowl ring. In fact, would have. I'm gonna ride with the Chiefs.
All
been
right.
A long time waiting, 50 years getting in there. I think they cash it.
Ah, man, a guy that loves the Niners so much keeps ticking against them.
Oh, I liked the Niners last week, but I was just hoping for Super Bowl.
I love the Niners. I love the Niners. I like Green Bay. I like the Niners.
I think it'll be a great game. God, I love what San Francisco does offensively.
But I keep picking against them.
I know. Well, I picked them against Minnesota.
You're turning into me.
I picked them against Minnesota.
Okay. Well, that was, yeah, I mean, come
Green
on, that's
Bay,
an easy call.
I don't know. I know it feels stupid now. I know San Francisco was better.
You love the Niners so much and then picked against them to a team that had been outgained this season.
But now Kansas City, they've been 2-0 for me so far. I've had
the
Chiefs
they're good.
Both times.
I would advise Kansas City not to fall behind by 10 points or 24 points in the Super Bowl because when they do.
They'll lose this time.
Yeah, because what the Niners will do then is bleed the play clock down to like 1 second. And hand the ball off.
So San Fran all time is 5-1 in Super Bowls because they won the 4 with Montana and the 1 with Young.
And then they lost to the Ravens.
The Harbaugh Bowl.
Yeah.
And KC's 1-1. Isn't that 1969 with the great Hank Stram?
65 toss power trap.
65 toss power trap. I told you, boys. Got to keep matriculating that ball down the field. And by the way, San Francisco, really good at matriculating the ball down the field. Really good.
The Chiefs aren't bad either.
This should be a great game.
Oh, I think it is. It's a great matchup because you got the strength. The Chiefs offense against the Niners defense is just a terrific matchup.
You and I both like a good kit. I don't know who the home team is, so if you know, don't spoil it for me. What would your ideal uniform combo be for the two?
I would like to see the Chiefs in their white.
I would, too.
And the Niners with their red and the gold pants.
I like it every now and then when San Fran busts out the white pants. But I like the gold, too.
Yeah.
I think the red and gold's good. I like the Chiefs white wearing red pants.
Yeah, I don't know how they – do they do it just the team with the better record that was the higher seed?
No, I think it alternates AFC, NFC. So I can't remember who it was
last
year.
Well, the Patriots wore blue last year.
So the Chiefs should wear white.
Yeah.
That was Braman I do in our Humphrey Bogart from Casablanca.
But even if they do it the other way, that would still work out because the Niners would be the higher seeded team.
Right.
And so they would wear whatever, you know, their home, and then the Chiefs would wear white.
That was one of those. I found myself really pulling hard for the Chiefs. I just wanted a good game in the second one. Like I said, you couldn't lose after the Chiefs won. But I have a soft spot in my heart for Chiefs fans.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are similarities. I mean, really, it's more so with Andy Reid, even going back to his time as a coach for the Eagles.
There's
just, you know, the constant coming up short.
By the way, I think that's proof positive that sometimes there's a healthy divorce. And you know what? Andy Reid had a lot of success with the Eagles. They probably should have gone to a couple more Super Bowls. They didn't. But you know what? Since he left there, Philadelphia's won a Super Bowl, and now Andy Reid has gone to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So everybody's happy.
And the Eagles keep making the playoffs.
Sure. Doug Peterson.
Wasn't great this year, but they did make the playoffs.
Yes.
All right, yeah, going back to that time, he had a chance encounter with me.
That's awesome. On the beach.
Yep.
That really could have changed his life.
Could have. He decided, I don't want to be some bum just throwing the ball on the beach with some kid. I want to make something out of my life. And he did.
I think you inspired him to become a great coach.
Yeah.
And you said, listen, if you're ever up 7, go for 2.
Yes. Go for 2. And he's as good at that as anybody. I was even thinking about, like, you know, when you're if you're up by three scores or two scores, don't kick a field goal to remain up by the same number of scores you're already up.
My biggest pet peeve is kicking the field goal to go up six. My second biggest pet peeve is kicking the field goal to go up 13.
Yeah.
You're setting yourself up for a one-point loss.
Yeah, and then the other team's going to use all four of its downs.
And like you said, if you're up two, can you kick to go up five? Yeah. What if you get 1 yard and you win the game? Go for the 1 yard.
That's the better option.
At that point, the feeling of, oh, we got to get points, not always. Think about when the Pats threw the pick to the Titans at the end of that game at 14-13. Points weren't good for Tennessee there. The guy should have slid down.
I know.
That was the only chance then that the Pats had to win. Although, I love that Vrabel went for two there, up seven. That was the right call.
Yeah, because he probably realized, guy, he should have gone down.
Right.
Because now you're going to give, like, wait a second. The game actually now is not over.
Not over.
Brady's going to have this one Hail Mary.
That's right.
All right, well, there's your 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.